But first, I'm going to talk about a recently published book that can save you from divorce or, at worst, a life of misery. Having read it, I realized just how ignorant I was when it came to assessing relationships, and that I was extremely lucky with mine and could easily have made the wrong choice. The book is called I Only Want to Get Married Once by Hannah Levitan, an educator, lecturer, and relationship coach. But before you dismiss this title as just another book of the many on the subject, let me tell you that rather than preach, it holds your hand and guides you through a process of evaluating your newfound love and to assess your suitability for each other, stage by stage. Here's a snippet from the book. As we were walking through the park one afternoon, I suddenly felt a click. After a while, we started talking so intensely that we became oblivious to everyone and everything around us. So why didn't it work out? She was on a different path. Eventually, we felt alone, even when we were together. Why did the magic evaporate? Why was he so blind? Well, to explain this and a great deal more, I'm pleased to welcome to the studio of Arutz Sheva the author Hannah Levitan.
Thank you, Walter. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I said you're an educator. That's a broad term. What exactly do you do?
So I'm a teacher. I'm a lecturer. I'm very passionate about giving over ideas and connecting to people through the material that I have developed, which is primarily about relationships. I feel very strongly about helping people to make the right choices in marriage, since when people make the wrong choices, there's so much pain and turmoil.
Now to the question that arose from the piece I just quoted. Why can one get so carried away?
Oh, it's a long story, but to try to make it short, chemistry is a very powerful thing. When two people meet, the chemistry can hit the roof and beyond. But not necessarily does that mean that there's something real between them. We know that infatuation, which is just that intense chemistry, could last up to about 3 years. Dr. Helen Fisher talks quite a bit about this. And because of that, you know, we can't really trust that chemistry, although we would like to. There's also a drug, phenylethylamine, which is executed in our systems when infatuated. So we're really on a high at that point. So in order to see beyond this, we need to ask ourselves some really important questions to remain in reality.
You speak of listing and knowing one's values as a basis for dating before even going on a date. Why is that so important?
Our values are our bedrock ideals, our gut feelings, that which we live by. And if two people hit it off, but their values are not going to match up, there's going to be a train wreck. And that is painful. So rather than getting all emotionally involved and then discovering that two people are on the completely different track, the goal is to make sure before you get emotionally involved that you're really going down the same track, and then the emotional involvement will be that much more profound.
So how do values relate to interests? People have the same interests, and if we have, then we should be okay.
Well, that's a big, big mistake that people make. And an easy one to fall into, because shared interests are great. It's wonderful when we both love to play tennis, when we both love to travel. But shared interests change with time. And one day we might not want to play tennis. And if that's really what's connecting us, there's going to be a problem. So the core of what's connecting two people are their values. From values come goals, and after the goals come the interests in terms of importance. So common interests, great if they match up, as long as the values are matching up, which also means that many goals will match up.
I particularly like the parts in your book that deal with realization of one's own shortcomings, how to be honest with oneself and therefore not to have unrealistic expectations of the date, like the examples you give of the not-so-good-looking young men. Perhaps you would very briefly relate that story.
It's a couple who hit it off, were dating, everything was going great, they really liked each other, everything was there except for one thing. He was bothered by the fact that she had a big nose. And it was something that she was also bothered about. She wasn't crazy about her nose, and she had thought many times about getting a nose job. And when it came down to it, the message was, hey, I really do want to marry you, but this nose is really getting in the way. And she said, I want to get my nose done. They got engaged with this understanding. They got married. Things were busy. They had a child. And then one day she realized, hey, I haven't gotten my nose job. I got to go make this appointment. And she made the appointment, and she told her husband, I'm finally going to get my nose done. He said, what do you mean you're getting your nose done? She said, well, you know, I told you I would get a nose job. He says, don't you touch that beautiful nose. The point is that attraction is extremely important, but sometimes getting to know a person, we really find so many wonderful things about them. The attraction can grow.
Sometimes one meets on holiday or a business trip and is seriously attracted. Can a long-distance relationship work?
Long-distance relationships are known to be problematic, and largely because there is a strong infatuation element or a fantasy element. The 3-year peak that I had mentioned earlier that is quoted by Dr. Helen Fisher is true when two people are in a relationship, the 3-year peak of infatuation. When in the long-distance relationship, the couple are not actually in the relationship, they're not really getting to know one another, and therefore the infatuation can potentially last longer, which is why there's so many disastrous long-distance relationships. I'm not saying that it can't work. People have to be that much more careful to spend quality time together before making a commitment, because two people who get along 2,000 miles away from one another doesn't mean that they're going to get along in the same home or in the same vicinity. So quality time has to be made, dating face-to-face, really getting to know one another.
There are cases, though, where long-distance relationships do work.
Absolutely, yes, of course. And one of the benefits to a long-distance relationship is sometimes, you know, people talk about real things, but one of the problems is when they finally are together, a 2-day or a 3-day or a 3-hour meeting, the intensity can obscure some of the differences and the problems and fool the couple into thinking that the relationship is more real than it actually is.
Your book is full of different examples. So how does one deal, for instance, with the interfering prospective mother-in-law?
I used to talk a lot more freely about before I became a mother-in-law myself. So the husband and wife are a committed, unified team. In-laws and parents have to respect this. The interfering mother-in-law has to know that there's certain boundaries, and it's the responsibility of the husband and wife to create those boundaries and to stand by them. The parent cannot start to burn one against the other. When you're dating, you want to make sure, as much as you can see, that the person you're dating has healthy boundaries with their parents. And if the parent oversteps boundaries, you want to make sure that the person you're dating is aware of that and realizes the problem and can create healthy boundaries.
Beware of mothers-in-law. It's said that behind every successful man stands a woman. Is that what you describe as codependent, as a weakness in the man?
I believe behind every successful woman does also stand a wonderful man. Codependence is completely different. A codependent relationship is an unhealthy relationship because we have two people who really don't stand on their own 2 feet. In order for a relationship to be healthy, you need two individuals who have a sense of their individuality, who are then giving of themselves. A codependent relationship is composed of two people who don't feel a sense of self. It's commonly said that a happy marriage is two people becoming one. And that's true. However, the two becoming one can only be healthy if the one can also be two. That means that each one of them can stand on their own 2 feet.
Does that mean that one should assert oneself and not easily give in to the partner?
Well, it's complex because marriage is about giving and sharing. However, giving and sharing does not mean losing oneself, and it doesn't mean compromising one's internal values. So a healthy marriage is a combination of a strong sense of self and knowing who we are, and merging and giving and compromising with the other person, but not compromising one's self. And that's a big difference.
There are very many situations we discussed where it is best to break up the relationship to avoid sliding into something that will never be good. So when a relationship breaks up, One or another partner still can't let go, or the ghost of the first partner hovers around every new relationship, and yet some people are always attracted to the same unsuitable person. And they know it. It reminds me of an Einstein quote that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
It's really interesting how common this is, and we as human beings are attracted for all different reasons. And when we find ourselves attracted to someone of the wrong type, we have to stop and check what's going on. Who am I? Why am I attracted to this person? Oftentimes, some therapy is necessary for people who are really going down the wrong path to create more self-awareness, not only of who we are, but of who we want to be and what kind of a person is going to bring out that best part of ourselves, and to see the patterns and see where the unhealthy patterns are coming from.
Now, there are age gaps, educational gaps, salary gaps, social gaps, which can all make for a difficult marriage. What would your advice be?
Well, the gap could be problematic in many different ways. I come back to my first point, values. When values match up, then the gaps are less important. However, studies prove that too large of an age gap, many studies show more than 10 years, is going to be a problem. Many studies show if there's too big of an educational gap, there are going to be problems. So it's important to try to bridge that gap ahead of time. People know one of them has a PhD, the other one has not finished high school. There's going to be a challenge in that relationship. They have to know that going in and try to work it out ahead of time instead of being shocked. If there's a class gap, one's from a high-class family, one's from a low-class family, there's going to be a challenge in the relationship. Once the infatuation wears off, then the reality hits. And it's important to discuss these things ahead of time and know that the gap is going to create a lot of pressure and a challenge, and to figure out how the couple are going to work through that challenge.
Finally, with all those potential pitfalls, is it worth getting married?
Oh, yes, it is. And marriage is the best thing that could ever happen to a man and a woman. Unfortunately, today, there's so little awareness and preparation before marriage, and that's why we're watching the divorce rate climb with disastrous effects. And it's why I called my book, I Only Want to Get Married Once, to remind ourselves that is what we want. One of my radio interviews in the States, the guy started out by saying, "Hey, I only want to get married once." That's a great title. We seem to have forgotten that in America. He says to me, "Hannah Levitan, I thought because my parents had a great marriage that I was going to have the most incredible marriage also. I got married. It was a disaster. So I want you to tell me where I went wrong." We're live on the air. I don't know this guy. And I just was put on the spot. And I said to him, we live in infatuation culture. We think just because we feel that click, this is it. It's going to go. And that's just not the way it goes. A healthy, loving marriage takes work. And parents and grandparents, they knew these facts. And they were ready to do the work. Our problem is that we just expect it to happen. Marriage is amazing and it's wonderful. Yes. Challenging at times, it's very difficult at times, but it's through that work that two people can evolve and create the ultimate relationship, which is a mature, profound love.
Now, I could, of course, go through much more from the book, but I think we let the reader do the rest. It's packed with examples from real cases that are relevant to any age, whether you are experimenting with your first relationship or intend to look for a partner after divorce. Anyone in a potential new relationship will benefit immensely from these 135 pages. The book is called I Only Want to Get Married Once by Hannah Levitan, published by GeffenPublishing.com, and is available from all good book outlets. Hannah Levitan, thank you for being my guest.
Thank you, Walter. It's been my pleasure.